You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings to all. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Monday show, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. The Seahawks season has officially come to a conclusion, a 30-20 loss to the Rams in the wild card round. So we are officially entering off-season mode. We will revisit how the offense performed in Saturday's final game of the season, plus some mailbag questions in a jam-packed episode. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Unceremoniously and in an instant, the Seahawks 2020 season has come to an end. Though they were playing at Lumen Field against a shorthanded Rams squad that they had beaten 2 weeks earlier for a division title, the Seahawks came up short, a 30-20 defeat. Their season's officially finished. And after the game, Jamal Adams, he gutted it out, played through a torn labrum in his left shoulder. That is toughness, ladies and gentlemen. Also has been playing with broken fingers. His right shoulder's injured. Luckily, he won't need surgery on that one. But, Rob, it's going to be a very long offseason for Jamal Adams because he's going to need that labrum repaired. He's going to need his broken fingers repaired. And, of course, he's going to be entering his contract negotiations. I find it hard to believe he's going to be showing up for training camp if he does not have a new deal in place.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see. Pete Carroll talked about it in his postseason wrap up here on Monday, basically just kind of breaking that news that the Jamal Adams would indeed require surgery on the torn labrum in his shoulder. That's the injury that occurred just a couple of weeks ago. And Adams has been showing his toughness all season long and really going all the way back to his time at LSU, Corbin. That's one of the things that was so exciting about him is that he really does play with that kind of warrior mentality, and kudos to him for playing in a game in which most people wouldn't be able to even consider. And at times he played very well. There certainly were some missed tackles. There were some missed opportunities in this game and in some of the other games that we've seen with Jamal Adams. But again, just bringing that kind of toughness to the field is something that the Seahawks very much prioritize. That's why they invested the draft picks in trading for him. That's why I expect that they're going to wind up giving him a significant deal in the offseason. But again, the big news here is that Jamal Adams is indeed going to require surgery on one shoulder, thankfully not the other shoulder. Get those fingers figured out and then hopefully be able to hit the field when the Seahawks return to training camp.
And that's one of the prices that you pay when you're a 210-pound safety and you play a lot of your snaps near the line of scrimmage. You're going to get hit a lot by some players that are much, much bigger than you. And so it's not unusual to see a player like that get banged up time to time. But luckily for Seattle, this is a young player. These are injuries that have really good success rates coming back. It's not like Jamal Adams is a left-handed quarterback and we're going to have to worry about his labrum being an issue when he returns to the field. They get that surgically repaired, and he comes back full strength, he should be good to go. So that's good news for the Seahawks. I thought he played pretty darn well in this game when you consider what he was dealing with injury-wise. There are certainly going to be some who could argue, would they have been better off if Ryan Neal played in this game? But that was not going to happen. And really, when you take away a couple of those missed tackles, that clearly he was hindered by the fact that he couldn't get a clean wrap and his left shoulder was giving him issues. But really, there were two big plays in this game that he ended up missing. He had a tackle on a 44-yard gain off of a dump-off pass to Cam Akers, was not able to make the tackle, so that one loomed large. And then there was another 44-yard play where Cooper Kupp, Jamal Adams had excellent coverage on him, and you could just tell he was not going to make excuses after the game, but he could not get his left hand up high enough to make a play on the football, and Kupp ended up catching it. If Jamal Adams is healthy, I think he at least gets a deflection there. And that's really been the tale of his first story with the Seahawks. How many times have we seen him drop interceptions? And I've started to wonder, was it really coming down to the finger situation? I'm sure it's very difficult to catch a pass from an NFL quarterback when you've got multiple broken fingers on the same hand. And then this time he couldn't get his arm up because he's got that labrum tear as well. So he really gutted it out. I thought he made some big plays in this game. He had a key pass deflection on the second down. The Rams ended up punting two plays later, had a couple other really nice plays in coverage, made some plays in the run game. And so I am not on the side of the fence that believes that they should have played Ryan Neal. Neal still played a fair amount of snaps in this game when they ran their dime packages, did some things on special teams. But Jamal Adams, just the energy that he brings, you could tell the way he was bouncing around. The adrenaline kicked in the beginning of the game. I think that it ended up being beneficial for him to be on the field. This is just a different defense when Jamal Adams is out there. Mistakes were made, but nonetheless, he's going to get these surgeries done, and the Seahawks now can hope that they're going to re-sign him. They're going to extend him. He is going to be under contract for this season, so they don't have to worry about losing him right now. But again, I would be very surprised if we get to camp in July or August, whenever things end up working out. We'll see where COVID's at by that time this year. But when that time arrives, I would be very surprised if Jamal Adams shows up on time if he has not received a lucrative extension.
Yeah, and that's obviously going to be one of the huge stories of this offseason. And I do think that it's going to be a tumultuous offseason for the Seahawks. And again, Pete Carroll talked about it in his postseason press conference about how concerned that he was just with the fact that the Seahawks have done such a remarkable job, Corbin, of keeping their players healthy, keeping them committed to the idea of being very consistent and cautious in their approach away from the stadium and away from the team facilities, and making sure that they themselves don't get sick or nobody else and their families get sick. That's going to be one of the big challenges here. And oh, by the way, that while, as you mentioned, Jamal Adams has one more year remaining on his deal, the Seahawks have 24 unrestricted free agents, including some of the biggest names on their team. The guys like KJ Wright, like Chris Carson, like Shaquille Griffin. That's something I'm looking forward to us talking about as the offseason goes on. But as you said, certainly with Jamal Adams and the price that Seattle paid for him to acquire him in the first place, then that is very much going to be a story that looms large over the entire offseason.
It's definitely something that we're going to touch on a time or two on this podcast in the coming months, and we'll see what the Seahawks choose to do there with what they gave up. Again, I would be stunned if they are not dishing out a big money contract to make him the highest paid safety in football, but we know John Schneider is a shrewd businessman as well, so we will end up seeing what happens as the offseason unfolds. This is something that I expect to happen before training camp. Again, they want to avoid that issue with their star safety. Get him locked up. He is one of your building blocks for the future on that defense. And make sure that you've got him under contract and that he's healthy. Coming up next in the second quarter, we're going to have our first offseason mailbag segment. Tons of questions from you, the 12s. We're going to answer as many as we can. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you ready for some football? The college football championship game is quickly approaching, and the NFL playoffs are now heading towards the divisional round. There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick-hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. It's time for our first mailbag segment of the offseason. Still very strange saying that. The Seahawks were just playing a couple days ago, and now the season is done. We have tons of questions from you, the 12s. We'll get to as many as we can here. Kennedy tweets, do you think the Seahawks have a shot at drafting Najee Harris? Could he fall that far? And would the Hawks take him if he does? It's draft season, Rob. You've got to be fired up.
Well, I'm always excited to look at the draft, and you know, I haven't done a good enough job of predicting the Seahawks one day before their draft, much less you know, 4 months before the draft. But, you know, but at the same time, I think that Najee Harris, the running back from Alabama, it absolutely would be a terrific fit for the Seahawks. You know, he is that big back that the Seahawks prioritize. He plays up to his size, or at least has this season. He's a terrific receiver out of the backfield. He also is a good in pass protection as well. So really checks off a lot of the box that the Seahawks look for. To me, this all comes down to whether or not Seattle is able to retain Chris Carson or Carlos Hyde. Both of them are, of course, among those 24 unrestricted free agents. If Seattle is able to retain either one of them, then I don't know that necessarily running back is going to be the position of concern. But if not, then I think that Najee Harris, Trey Sermon, the running back playing for Ohio State Buckeyes, another quality back play in the national championship game, would be another one that the Seahawks would very much be interested in.
This is not what fans want to hear, especially just 3 days after getting knocked out of the playoffs and hearing Pete Carroll today talk about how the Seahawks need to run the ball more next year. I know a lot of fans were probably irate about that. I'm not in that corner. We'll talk about that a little bit in the third quarter, but I think the Seahawks have a very good chance of taking a running back early, even with their limited draft capital, especially if a player like Harris or Sermon is available when they pick in the second round. I could see John Schneider not being able to pass up on that. And the reason why is, unfortunately, we have not seen near enough from Rashad Penny to think that he is going to be your number one guy. When he's been healthy, he's played well. But again, he didn't play in the playoff game because he nicked his other knee up. So you just have major questions about whether the former first-round pick can be the guy at this point. Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde, as you mentioned, are both going towards free agency. Do you have the confidence that DJ Dallas can be the guy or Travis Homer? Probably not. And so I think there's a really good chance that a player like Harris or Sermon, if they're available, the Seahawks may take a chance on one of those running backs in the second round. They're going to try to find ways to recoup some picks too, potentially, but I think running back is going to be a position that's fairly high on their list. If they do re-sign Carson and or Hyde, that changes things because you'll have to invest some money then. I would be really surprised if they draft a running back early if that's the case. But that's a 50-50 proposition if they're going to be bringing back Chris Carson. So for now, I'm going to say there's certainly a chance one of those running backs could end up in a Seahawks uniform. Second question from Eric Mack tweets, do you think Pete Carroll knows his clock timeout management isn't ... the best? And do you think that Pete Carroll shouldn't meddle in the offensive schemes as much as he does? So basically, this has been the prevailing attitude the last three games or last 3 days since this game ended and Seattle got knocked out of the playoffs. A lot of questions again about Pete Carroll. And Rob, I think you and I would probably agree that there are certainly some issues at play here. But again, this is not a situation where one person needs to have all the blame after you lose a playoff game like this.
Yeah, I do think this is one of the concerns of Seattle, though. I mean, it's just been too long has this been an issue where the questionable timeouts, questionable, you know, struggles basically coming out of timeouts in some of their play calls, some of the decisions of when they are going to, you know, try to get a replay or a review of the play. It's just been an issue. So, yeah, I think that, again, if we're going to be focusing on Seattle superstars, we're going to call out Jamal Adams, we're going to call out Russell Wilson, call out Bobby Wagner, as I've done over and over again a little bit this year, then I think you have to call out Pete Carroll on this kind of thing. I mean, he's losing his son, Brennan Carroll, who Pete Carroll mentioned today was one of the few people who was willing to kind of step up and challenge him at times. So I think that's something the Seahawks are going to have to address and see if they can get a little bit more consistency in terms of being right on these types of calls.
Yeah, that is the big concern that I have with Pete Carroll. And it has been a concern for a long time. It's been the biggest Achilles heel in him as a coach is the clock and timeout management. And there's no question the fourth down issue the other day, fourth and one, you had a player injured on the field in Damian Lewis. So it was basically a free timeout for the Seahawks. And yet they didn't get out of the huddle until there were 6 seconds left on the play clock. Because as he worded today, he was battling the play call with Brian Schottenheimer. And so it just was an ugly situation. And we see that happen too many times. There was another challenge that never should have been done in this football game as well. So the Seahawks just threw away one of their timeouts. So yes, the clock timeout management is an area that has continued to be a problem for Pete Carroll and the Seahawks. As far as meddling with the offensive scheme, that may have been a little bit to do with what Russell Wilson was struggling with the second half of the season. He definitely made it clear today that he was in his ear a little bit about limiting the turnovers and stuff, and maybe they overcompensated there. But I don't think that that's as big of a deal as what the clock time management stuff is. To me, those are the glaring issues that have been major problems for several years and have not really shown improvements. We keep seeing the same mistakes made over and over again, and that really is a problem. Third question from Brady Hill tweets, is Pete Carroll's loyalty to his staff holding this team back, and do you think he needs to be more ruthless and let members of the staff go when the play calling performances haven't been good enough for the standards of our franchise?
No, I disagree with that 100%. I think that Pete Carroll's loyalty and the loyalty that his coaches and his staff give him back is absolutely the biggest reason why Seattle has had the success that they have had. You know, and obviously this is a disappointing loss for a lot of people. There's some Seahawks fans out there who are heartbroken right now. At the same time, this is a team that just went through a pandemic, went through the most tumultuous season probably in NFL history. I mean, you consider everything that has been going on, and this team won the divisional title 12-4. They had an absolutely historic turnaround on the defensive side of the ball. If you want to, you know, throw people under the bus because that they didn't reach the expectations of the standards of our franchise that in 45 years has won one Super Bowl, and that and this is the guy who actually took you there, then, you know, I think that you have to just temper your enthusiasm, your expectations a little bit, and realize that this isn't a game that the Seahawks lost because they were disappointing. It's a game that the Rams, frankly, were the better, more physical, faster, more hungry team, and they just took the game away from the Seahawks, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think at this point. I mean, you could make the argument when he finally cut Cable with Tom Cable a few years back. That was one that I thought could have happened at an earlier point. And maybe Daryl Bevel, they could have moved on a year or so earlier. But I think the loyalty to his coaching staff is actually a really good thing. And I think that these assistants, they want to be on Seattle staff. They want to learn from Pete Carroll, who is still one of the best coaches in football. He has his faults. Every coach has their faults. But this has been the winningest era in Seahawks history by a wide margin. And yeah, it's disappointing they lost this first playoff game. But look what Ken Norton Jr. did the second half of the season with this defense after how poorly they played in the first half. That's not a coordinator that deserves to get fired. Brian Schottenheimer, the first half, this offense was on fire. Yes, they crumbled in the second half compared to what they were doing. This offense hit a brick wall. But I don't know how much of that falls directly on Schottenheimer, and I don't think he has earned getting fired either. And so Pete Carroll, you know, who knows? Maybe there'll be a surprise move here, but I don't think either one of those guys has to worry about their job, and they shouldn't have to. I think both of them did good jobs this season given different situations. There are areas they can improve, but that's what they're going to do. They are going to try to work on improving on the issues they had this season rather than just wiping the slate clean and bringing in new coaches. Anthony Locke tweets, Pete Carroll said he wants to keep the pass rushing group intact. Assuming they don't add another big name there, how do they return to an elite defense? I don't know about you, Rob, but I would just try to keep status quo in pass rushing group and then hope that you're going to have Daryl Taylor back next year and you basically get a free stud off the edge that you didn't have this year.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that you hope that Daryl Taylor is able to come back and hit the ground running. You hope that you're able to retain Carlos Dunlap, who is doing an awful lot of money. We saw the impact that he was able to make for the Seahawks. It isn't always statistically. There's going to be lots of people out there who are going to, you know, say, oh, Dunlap didn't do much against the Rams. I mean, if you watch the game, then you really can see the impact that he had. You know, and so I agree with you 100%, Corbin. I think that if they are able to just keep this group intact, stock, then they really have a lot of reason to be excited about it, because some of their better players, I mean, just seeing the development of LJ Collier in his second season, seeing the flashes that Alton Robinson gave you, you know, those pass rushers, they're expensive in terms of draft commodity or in terms of signing them as free agents. So if Seattle can continue to improve that talent, then I think that is the first big step in creating a defense that is going to live up to those previous standards and have it be an elite unit.
Yeah, I think they should be really excited about this defense going into next season, because they've got most of their key players under contract. You're going to have players like Jordan Brooks, Daryl Taylor, that are going to play big roles, hopefully, for this defense, even bigger roles if you're looking at Brooks. They've got some young corners they like. DJ Reed really came on the scene. He's going to be under contract. Both their safeties are going to be there. So there's a lot to like about this group. I think you just got to be able to retain Carlos Dunlap. That means you extend him to lower that cap hit a little bit. You bring back Benson Mayoa, and you've got a couple of young rushers with Taylor and Robinson. I think that this group is going to hit the ground running next year, and they're not going to have to worry about the issues they had this season where the trade deadline, they're panicking, need to go make a trade, which ultimately ended up working out. They want to avoid having to do that unless they absolutely have to. I would not expect them to go out and get another big name. Christopher tweets, what will it take for Pete Carroll to change the offensive and defensive philosophy and be more new school centric? I'll let you answer this in a second, Rob, but I don't know. Maybe this is just me being, you know, I'm getting old. Maybe I'm just becoming an old grouch. But what else is Pete Carroll supposed to do? The Seahawks were still throwing on 63% of their downs in the second half of the season. It's not like the Let Russ Cook movement completely went off the rails. They were still putting the ball in their quarterback's hands. If anything, all the calls Pete Carroll made for running the football more back in November never really came to fruition for this football team. And then on defense, they made adaptations in the second half to really go with the personnel that they had. And Ken Norton Jr. and Carroll both deserve a lot of credit for that defense turning around and doing some things differently schematically. So I don't know. I don't know about you, Rob, but I don't think that there's an issue with them not trying to make some philosophical changes. I think we've seen them. And quite frankly, I think in the second half on offense, they probably should have regressed a little bit to what we have seen in prior seasons to help their quarterback out a little bit.
No, I agree 100%. I think that rather than going new school, you're going to see Pete Carroll go back old school and run the damn ball and be the physical team that which he has always preached. You know, there's an old cliche out there, old dog doesn't learn new tricks. I mean, Pete Carroll is not a new coach. He has a philosophy that is won him Super Bowls. It's won him national championships. I don't think that you're going to see him change to some new school approach anytime soon. If that's what you want, I think you have to be waiting for a new head coach for the Seattle Seahawks.
And there are some fans that are going to want that. But I just, again, I think that we have seen a more willingness from Carroll on both sides of the ball to try some new things this year. And some of them worked, some of them didn't. And so I think the cries for those type of changes, yes, there's always room for improvement. There's always room to make adaptations. There's no question on offense that adjustments should have been made quicker. But again, as far as philosophy goes, I think that we have seen Pete Carroll make some changes that maybe he wouldn't have earlier in his tenure with the Seahawks. Last question here real quick. I think this is a perfect one for us to answer to wrap up this quarter, because this really is how I feel every time the season ends as a reporter and a podcaster. Steak and Stocks tweets, do you think that fans will ever appreciate first in the NFC West, or will they continue to, he used a different word for complaining here, before and after the season, not during?
I do not. No, I think that's the right of a fan. I mean, they are very passionate. It's one of the reasons why the 12s have given the Seahawks such a huge advantage for so long. And frankly, that's one of the reasons why I'm not at all surprised that the Seahawks wound up losing this first round in the playoffs, just because they have grown accustomed to be able to rely on the fans to be able to give them that type of energy. But no, I don't think that you are going to see enough Seahawk fans really give this club the credit for the success that they had again during such an incredibly difficult year, an extraordinary year for all of the challenges that this team faced and overcame. And I think, frankly, that the Seahawks should deserve a little, or should receive a little bit more credit for the success they had, including winning the NFC West division with a 12-4 record, the best that they've had since 2016.
And I'm going to take a little different approach to this because I completely understand where you're coming from. And I think a lot of fans have taken it way too far, like saying, let's trade Russell Wilson, stuff like that. That's when you know the season's over with, because you start seeing outrageous takes like that. But I will say this, you have a quarterback in the prime of his career. Your defense was able to put things together in the second half. And yet your offense, it was so dynamite the first eight games, could not turn the corner enough by the time the playoffs arrived to even win one playoff game. I think fans, understandably, had much higher expectations for this team because of how well they did in the regular season, getting to that 12-win threshold, winning the NFC West, which is considered the toughest division in football. You get out of that division, the expectation is, I know the players felt this way too, you are going to advance. You're going to win at least one or two playoff games, potentially make a Super Bowl run. And so I understand the disappointment, especially when the weak link for this team in recent weeks and at the end of the season here, unfortunately, has been the quarterback. Russell Wilson struggling, going through a prolonged slump like he's never had in his entire career up to this point. And so I get the frustration. I understand why fans are irritated and they're acting the way that they are. And again, this is a very passionate fan base. While I think they definitely, when we look back on this season, they will start to get more credit than what they're getting right now. It's going to be something that the players are going to have to grapple with, and fans are going to continue grappling with, that this team that had the most talented roster they've had since 2014 could not win a playoff game. It's going to be something that's going to bug fans, players, coaches, you name it. It's going to be a long offseason having to think about that until they're back out on the football field. When we come back in the third quarter, offensive takeaways time. It's not exactly going to be the most positive end to our Monday show, Rob, but we're going to look back at how the offense performed in a season-ending 30-20 wild card loss to the Rams. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited. Until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including six new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, my co-host from crime, Rob Rang. Wednesdays on Locked On NFL, take a deep dive into the future of your favorite NFL franchises. Tony Wiggins and James Rappian are joined every week by a local on-draft expert to talk prospects in the upcoming draft and young NFL players fresh in the league. Did your team have a big rookie performance this week? Or are they shaping up to have a premier draft pick in the 2021 draft? Get everything you need on Wednesdays, Locked On NFL. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get your podcasts. The Seahawks 2020 season coming to an end far earlier than they expected, losing in the opening wildcard round 30-20 to the Rams at home. We're going to talk offense today. There will be a lot more positives on tomorrow's show to kind of lead us truly into the offseason, but it's unfortunate, Rob, because for weeks, Pete Carroll had been speaking confidently that he was not concerned about this offense that had struggled so much the last couple of months. The Seahawks were able to win games in spite of the offense not being able to get back on track. They had three games in their past five with 20 or fewer points. The offense just was not anywhere close to humming like it was early in the season. And again, Carroll remained confident, unconcerned. We're going to get things figured out for the playoffs. And unfortunately, That did not happen. And the Rams, they just flat out played better football on both sides of the ball, particularly with that front line. Even after Aaron Donald left with an injury, the Seahawks simply could not protect Russell Wilson. That defensive line dominated this football game.
It absolutely did. And I'm happy that you mentioned that, Corbin, because that's the thing is I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to focus on the quarterback. And obviously, when you are the second highest paid player in NFL, then the bullseye on you is that much bigger. Obviously, Russell Wilson is not quite as speedy as he once was. That there were some throws that he flat missed in this game. But most of the throws that he missed in this game was because the Rams defensive line completely dominated Seattle at the point of attack. One of the things that led to my optimism, certainly, and I believe led to Pete Carroll's optimism as well, is the fact, and we touched upon this before the game, Corbin, that Seattle would be returning their starting five offensive line. But Brandon Schell and Mike Yiapati struggled in this game. They were beaten repeatedly. And frankly, Dwayne Brown, Ethan Posick, and Damian Lewis weren't that much better. When Jordan Simmons was in for Yiapati, he wasn't that much better either. If you remember the big touchdown throw or the missed touchdown throw, I should say, that when you saw DK Metcalf actually beat Jalen Ramsey deep over the top and Russell Wilson misses him by just a yard or two. Watch that play again. Mike Yiapati gets one good shove on Aaron Donald and Donald is on Wilson in a blink. And that's the reason why that's not a touchdown. That's the difference in this game. Seattle's offense scored 20 points. That's the same number of points they scored when they beat the Rams just a couple of weeks ago. The difference in this game was that the Rams defensive line just absolutely dominated Seattle at the point of attack. And then, of course, the two critical turnovers that wound up basically just giving the Rams points, and it wound up taking points off the board for the Seahawks.
There's one play that tells you how this game went for the offensive line. If you have access to the All-22 film on NFL Game Pass, there is a stunt that the Rams ran, and Troy Reader, the linebacker, came in and just absolutely bulldozed Brandon Schell, knocked him onto his backside, and that allowed the edge rusher to come shooting inside untouched and get a big hit on Russell Wilson. I had to watch this play about 15 times in a row because it was just, even though the Rams are the ones that did it, it was just fantastic. It was as well executed of a stunt as you're going to see. The linebacker just basically sacrificing himself by blowing up the tackle, and Brandon Schell didn't know he was coming and got completely caught off guard. Again, gets knocked on his backside, and that was happening a lot this game. You saw linemen on the ground, Russell Wilson running for his life, and they had a 50% pressure rate in this game. You're not going to win very many games when the opposing defensive line is able to generate pressure like that. And so obviously the offensive line did not play near as well as you and I thought they were going to. It was a struggle across the board. That was the worst game Brandon Schell played all year. It was the worst game that Ethan Posick played. Honestly, Posick's best play was drawing a hold, because otherwise Russell Wilson would have got murdered. So that tells you what kind of a game Ethan Posick had at the center position. It was unfortunate. Mike Yiapati did not look healthy out there. Dwayne Brown had one of his weaker games in quite some time. They just, as a unit, it was just an off night. They picked the worst night to do it. But I'm not going to just give Russell Wilson a free pass either. And I know there are a lot of people out there that believe that the issues with Wilson in the second half have been schematic. And I think that there's certainly something to say for that. But once again, if you watch the game film, I feel like I've been saying this week in, week out. You're seeing a quarterback that's extremely indecisive at times. He's double clutching when he's got receivers open. There were a few throws in this game that were easy pitch and catch that he threw errant passes on. And so the accuracy was an issue. And a couple of those, he wasn't getting pressured either. They were quick throws and he just simply was off target. And so I wrote an article about it today. I think Russell Wilson's going to get things fixed this offseason. I think he's going to come back next year. He and Brian Schottenheimer are going to talk a lot this offseason. They're going to figure out what went wrong here. But the quarterback absolutely deserves to be held accountable for this team not reaching expectations. When you complete 41% of your passes and have a 17.7 QBR, which was one of the five worst he's had in an NFL game as a quarterback since he entered the league, when you do that in the wild card round, and yes, pressure was certainly part of it, but He misfired a number of plays in this game. He made some decisions with the football where he didn't unload it, and it put him in tough spots with that pass rush. And so, again, I just think Russell Wilson, you've got to put plenty of blame on his shoulders too. It looks like there were some plays that were schemed open and he just missed them. We've seen that too much. He just simply wasn't good enough for this team to advance in the playoffs.
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, Wilson, there were just so many plays where it felt like he had a 3 or 4 or 5 yard gain and just held the ball longer where he was looking for longer plays on the few times when he did have some time. And as you said, I mean, he just missed some wide open receivers. There were a number of plays that the tight end Hollister, for example, right up the middle where the pass was just a couple of inches away from him. It would have been an incredible reception by Hollister, you know, to be able to make those catches. And that would be one of the things I would say, because I agree with you. I am not necessarily quite as optimistic as what you just said there, Corbin, as far as that Russell Wilson is going to necessarily get that much better in the offseason. I think it's important to take a step back, first off, and just acknowledge that what Russell Wilson did, throwing for the most touchdowns ever by a Seattle Seahawks quarterback in a season, that is significant, even with his poor play down the stretch. But at the same time, this was not a 1 or 2 game poor play down the stretch. And unless Seattle adds some significant help at the pass catcher position, and I don't say this, I say pass catcher because it doesn't necessarily have to be wide receivers. But the Seahawks, besides DK Metcalf, basically going off in this game, you know, I mean, Tyler Lockett was Seattle's second highest, you know, most productive receiver with 2 catches. That's it. We talked so much about Seattle had to find a third pass catcher in this game. Carson had 1 catch. Disley had 1 catch. David Moore had 1 catch. Freddie Swain had 1 catch. And the Freddie Swain catch was a spectacular throw and catch by Swain. The Tyler Lockett catch was a spectacular one-handed grab, perfectly placed ball by Russell Wilson. But that would be part of my point, Corbin, is that when Seattle was able actually to complete some of their passes on the outside, it required precision passes because Seattle's wide receivers just weren't able to get off, you know, weren't able to get much, you know, much space between them as well. And then you complement that, or excuse me, you makes it even worse when the few times that they were able to get open and that the line did provide him some time, then Wilson himself wasn't very accurate. So again, I think that there is plenty of blame to be placed along this. I don't know that any of it deserves to be on the coaches.
Yeah, the one thing that does deserve to be on the coaches, and I think you and I can agree, disagree on how much, what percentage it goes to Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, Schottenheimer, whatever. But I think one thing you and I will wholly agree on from this game is the Seahawks did not run the football enough. The one thing that I noticed, and I was starting to see this midway through the second quarter, when the Seahawks were under center in this game and they were running outside zone against the Rams, they were having a lot of success. I mean, Chris Carson was averaging over 6 yards a carry at one point in this game, and yet they kept coming into positions where it's like the run game's working, and then Chris Carson would only have been out there for 2 or 3 plays, and then in comes Carlos Hyde, and then Hyde gets stuffed for 1 yard gain. And this is nothing against Carlos Hyde, but if Chris Carson's your workhorse, which they said that he was going, they were, you know, going to let him loose, if he's your guy, he shouldn't be subbing himself out after 3 plays. He shouldn't be. And so that was something that I kind of had to shake my head about a little bit. And then just the fact that they were trying to run so much out of shotgun, the Rams were blowing those plays up. But when they were under center, they were able to move the line of scrimmage. They were able to create some creases. And so that would be the one thing schematically that I got to call Brian Schottenheimer out for, because I know he likes running the football. He had to have noticed that at some point that they're not stopping our under center game. And I think you get more play action passes off of that than you do working out a shotgun 80% of the time. And so that was the one schematic issue that I had in this game. And quite frankly, I think you look back at the season again, Pete Carroll was saying in November, we need to lean on the run game a little bit more. I don't know the Seahawks ever actually did that. And that's what's ironic about all the fans complaining about the idea we need to run the ball more. I think Pete Carroll's been calling for it, and quite frankly, the Seahawks, they have not obliged, and I think it ended up hurting them a lot in this game, especially when you're playing against a team that's rushing the pass with the way the Rams were. I just felt like they put themselves in positions where They weren't able to run the ball as much as they should have, and it ended up backfiring.
It really did. And that is one of the things, as you were explaining that, you're absolutely right. And so I got to kind of take a step back there with my lack of criticism in Seattle's play calling and schemes and things like that, because I think that you're absolutely right again with the running game and by trying to run the ball out of shotgun, that wasn't working. I'd also argue that if you look at the Seattle's specific lineup or specific alignment that they used on, of course, the pick six that Malcolm Butler, Darius Williams returned back the other way for that interception, then, you know, it was fairly obvious what play Seattle was looking at. If you watch it, you know, Darius Williams, give him all the credit in the world. He saw that play from the snap. And so he was running upfield. Freddie Swain misses the block. Russell Wilson shouldn't have thrown that ball once he recognized that the corner was crashing down as much as he was. It was just a series of mistakes there. That led to obviously the play that wound up completely changing the game. I thought that once that Seattle got down there, that's where they truly started to abandon the run. That's where Russell Wilson started to panic. And you could just see that the entire momentum of the game to me ended right there. And it basically was, could Seattle even get a chance to make this game close? Because it felt like the Rams were going to run them out of their own building.
That and DJ Reed's fumble on the punt return in the fourth quarter. Those two plays were truly the dagger in Seattle's postseason. If you take those two plays out of the equation, I think the Seahawks have a really good chance, even with all the issues they had offensively, winning this game. And we'll talk about this tomorrow. The defense was playing really well for most of the game. They forced seven punts. I mean, the defense did what they needed to do for the most part. They weren't perfect. They gave up some rushing yards, but when you look back at it, it was those two big plays. And I'm not going to blame Russell Wilson for that interception, because if you've ever played quarterback, which I only did on a JV team, but I can tell you those quick bubble screens like that, as fast as Williams got in there, you got to take the snap and just throw it. That's way easier said than done to be like, oh, just pull that ball back. I don't think Russell Wilson ever could have thought a guy was going to shoot through like he was shot out of a cannon there to pick a pass off. And so I will defend Russell Wilson on that one. Freddie Swain wasn't able to make the block. It was just read so well by Darius Williams. So certainly there were some schematic things like that you can look at. You got to wonder if they were trying to force it to Metcalf after he threw a bit of a tantrum on the sideline. That was not something I enjoyed seeing up in the press box. If that was going on, there were just a number of things. It was just a disheartening performance on offense. The quarterback struggled. The offensive line with all five starters, easily the worst game those guys have played together. Rams dominate them up front. There were some drop passes. Receivers were getting open, ball not getting to them. It was a dysfunctional day on offense. And when you do that in the playoffs, you go home for an early vacation, and that's what the Seahawks now are going to be able to do here the next few months. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Even though it's the offseason, it never stops on Locked On Seahawks. We're going to be back with a Throwback Tuesday episode tomorrow. We're going to be revisiting some of the free agent moves that the Seahawks made before the 2020 season and handing out some grades, and we'll have some defensive takeaways from Saturday's wild card loss to the Rams. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.